deal with them before they constitute problems for the department. So we hope that this process will be ongoing. We don't hope. We are ensuring that that happens. It becomes part of our program of action on a regular basis, so that what we mean by this is that the department itself prepares to communicate to us at this appropriate time frames as agreed with them around this issue. So with those few words of introduction, we request the DG to talk to us. DG.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. We are having three presentations to deal with the three items on the agenda. And Chairperson, we will obviously take guidance from you in terms of the sequence, but we can take the sequence as indicated and start with the item that you just mentioned, the one on the section.
Let me interrupt. No, we don't make it's not logical.
You know what I mean. The logic is to start with the plan of action arising from the state of the national trust, and then zero in into the let's deal with the financials after that, and then the Millennium Development Goals. Although we could handle it differently elsewhere, but for now let's do it that way. Let's start in the middle of the agenda and then go to number one as is on the agenda there, and then finish with the Millennium Development Goals. Okay.
No, thanks. That's exactly what I was seeking to get guidance on. So
you said that you're being indirect and polite and so on. Make a proposal. Okay, DG.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I assumed there was a sequence to the bullets, but that's fine.
Okay, okay.
Right, so we have with us a set of officials who are responsible for these various areas of work. I'm going to ask Mr. Siabelo Molefi to make the presentation on the plan of action arising from SONA. And let me just say at the outset that as a department, we don't have a specific plan of action arising from SONA. We have an annual performance plan, and annual performance plan gives expression to the priorities of SONA and other priorities that arise from government. But we will demonstrate those linkages very, very clearly in that presentation. Mr. Molefi is the chief director in our department responsible for corporate planning. So his primary responsibility is to make sure that the priorities of the department, the plans of the department, are in fact aligned to the broader plans of government. I'll introduce the other colleagues later, but we have colleagues from the ministry, and we have DDG here, and we also have colleagues from finance that are part of our broader delegation and chair. So let me introduce the other colleagues at the appropriate time, but if I can hand over directly to Mr. Molefi. Thank you.
Thanks, DG. Thank you, Chair. As the DG pointed out, I'll be taking you through the plan of action with regards to issues raised in the State of the Nation Address, how they are incorporated into our action plan and our annual performance plan. Just in opening, we think that the President's tone in the address continued to be open and conciliatory, but also programmatic, with a sense of urgency. We talk about the sense of agency because this needs to be things. This needs to show us the way how we do things faster, smarter, and how we ensure that we get to achieve the plans that we have planned for. And within the State of the Nation Address, the President talked about building a responsive, accountable, effective, and efficient local government system. This is in relation to Outcome 9. Of the Minister's Deliver Agreement with the President. And we're saying then that this Outcome 9 has been taken into consideration when we developed our annual performance plan. Just to talk about the major alignment, on that slide, the major alignment with regards to the COCTA work to that of the SONA teams. In the State of the Nation address, there were specific teams that were relating and they were directly linked to the work of our department, COCTA. And what we did is that if you can see in the packages, there's also a white document where there was an analysis of the State of the Nation address that was done immediately after the State of the Nation address, pointing directly to issues that are related to our department. So what we then did after the State of the Nation address is that we took the State of the Nation address and we took it during our planning sessions and incorporated it into our annual performance plan during our planning sessions in February. So then we're saying that we are confirming to the portfolio committee that issues that were raised in the State of the Nation address are being catered for within our annual performance plan, which is our program of action. And I'll be highlighting that as we go along. But then the other issues that the annual performance plan caters for all issues that were raised in the national address, and therefore is our program of action for the medium term. When we get into the actual themes against what our annual performance plan is saying, the State of the Nation address, the President pointed to issues of poverty alleviation and job creation. And the major things was that 2011 was declared the year of job creation through meaningful economic transformation and inclusive growth. And research has indicated that we can create jobs in 6 priority areas. I'm just pointing out infrastructure because it's mainly our core business. And in response to those areas, the department then has, as part of the job creation initiative, to create 4.5 million job opportunities in historically marginalized communities by 2014. The department has planned to create 63,170 job opportunities by the year 2011 through its coordination efforts. And this is also being done through the community works program where you ensure that, for instance, 30% of job opportunities will then be linked to the functional cooperatives at a specific ward level. We also have a new program of ensuring that we establish, in collaboration with district municipalities, 30 economic development advisory councils comprising of the local kitchens of industry, commerce, agriculture, and a view of identified of community business opportunities of a catalyst nature. For instance, this has been catered for on page 45 to 60 of our annual performance plan, of which was circulated previously to committee members. This issue was also raised by the BDG and in our previous engagement with the portfolio committee, and the issue was also welcomed by the chair that it needs more engagement. So then this is how we're saying we have positioned our programs to be responding to the issues raised on State of the Nation address, in specific to poverty alleviation and job creation. With the issues of involving other role players, the department, for instance, the State of the Nation address was pointing to issues of us involving other role players, and the department has created the Business Adopt a Municipality program to ensure that business is mobilized to participate in government initiatives. And the department is in the process of signing some of the MOUs with identified business to ensure that the program is taking place. There were issues of crime and corruption that were raised within the State of the Nation address. And here we're saying the President made specific reference to setting up of the special anti-corruption unit in the Department of Public Service and Administration to handle corruption-related disciplinary cases involving public servants. From our department, as we also alluded to this fact in our previous engagement our last engagement with the portfolio committee, that the department has developed an anti-corruption inspectorate. The community also engaged with the department in this regard. On issues of basic services, the president pointed out on issues of infrastructure development program that needs to enable access to basic services. So here we're saying there are targets that have been jointly being worked together with other departments, for instance, Department of Water Affairs and other departments to ensure that the coordination of access to basic services is reached. And for instance, our department is mainly focusing on using the municipal infrastructure grant to ensure that there is access to those kind of services. For instance, by we're saying water must be 1.4 million of households, sanitation 880,000 households, and for roads 1.1 million households must have access to roads, and community lighting 540,186. This is detailed in on page 45 to 60 of our annual performance plan.
Sorry, this is the second time I notice you read it the other way around. Is it deliberate? Are you correcting it? Keep saying 45 instead of 54.
Sorry. It's page 54.
Oh, okay. So you were not correcting it. Okay, no, that's fine. I just thought I left it earlier on, but now you're saying it the second time. I was beginning to assume that you are correcting me.
Okay.
If you are not, then it's 64. And you are not dyslexic at all.
No, sorry, sir.
Okay.
Okay, on page 54 as well, there is also a different approach of specifically focusing on issues of infrastructure. For instance, our department specifically planned to coordinate on issues of electricity coordination, to focus in on the building of substations and upgrading of MV lines, which is issues that directly relate to the building of infrastructure that will enable the access to services, as pointed out earlier on. So we're saying here, our role must be clear that we are coordinating access to this access to this basic services. We're not the main role players. We are coordinating, as the committee knows our role as such. With issues of administrative systems and financial management, the department has committed to ensure that it supports and coordinates efforts for municipal finance and administrative capacity is improved, so that all 278 municipalities will have unqualified audit opinions by the end of 2014. This is also expressed on those pages in the annual performance plan, page 39 to 44. So we're saying we have a program that's dealing directly with administrative systems and financial management, and it's really relating to what the state of the nation was saying. On issues of coordination, the coordination role of DCOC is being expressed through a joint work program that talk to a single window of coordination. One of the examples is the joint min-mac between the Department of Water Affairs and Human Settlement. We're saying this shows coordination in action, where we're saying there's one area where people are sitting around and discussing issues of coordination to ensure that people have access to basic services. The department has conducted as well an assessment of and written a report on all legislations that impede service delivery. And this legislation does not only reside within our department, but also in other government departments. And a report in this regard is available, and engagements are then carrying on with those specific departments to ensure that there are reviews of specific clauses that are hindering on us ensuring that we provide services to the people. The issue this slide is talking to issues that were raised previously by portfolio committee in the 2009 State of the Nation address. The provision of basic services in line with objectives of the Millennium Development Goals, We're saying here we have statistics of national basic service provision that were also quoted by the president. And our plan of action, the program of action, is then saying we need to move from the 93% of voters to 96%, from 70% to 88%, from 82% to 87%, and from 69% to 70% within the 2012-2013 financial year. The issue is that our targets are then in line with the electoral mandate of saying by the end of 2013-14, we ensure that all households will be having access to these basic services. And this is expressed in our annual performance plan. With regards to infrastructure, again, the President highlighted infrastructure development as a catalyst for faster service delivery provision and improved access, as indicated with respect to water, sanitation, electricity. Our plan, we're saying, is also talking to this and saying department work goes beyond the issue of coordinating basic services, but also provide provision, also talk to some of the issues of infrastructure blockages to provision of services. The issue that I pointed out earlier on the coordination of infrastructure-related issues with regard to electricity. There's also work that is being done jointly with Treasury with regard to the review of the MIG formula to ensure that, as raised, that regarding infrastructure, there are no account on the progress in implementing public infrastructure as the allocation of the 846 billion for public infrastructure. And I think colleague CDG Ricardo Hansi will elaborate more on this with regards to the progress with regard to the MIG infrastructure grant. There were also issues that the committee raised specifically with the development and implementation of tailor-made municipal turnaround strategies. They said that according to assessment, there were good examples and good progress, but however, there were challenges of skills deficit and still deficits that still impede speedy delivery of service. And in this regard, we say that there are legislative proposals under consideration, and some of them have gone passed through the committee. We're talking of the Green Paper on Cooperative Governance, the White Paper on Local Government, and the amendment of the Municipal Systems Act also includes provision of prohibiting municipal officials from holding executive positions in political parties. With issues of corruption that the committee raised in 2009, we're saying currently the department established an anti-corruption inspectorate. But also with regards to the legislative angle, the amendment bills that amend the municipal system to prohibit re-employment of municipal employees who have been dismissed on charges of fraud and corruption has been approved by Parliament on 13 April and is being currently considered by the President. So these are some of the issues that the committee raised in the 2009 state of on issues that relate to 2009 State of the Nation address. But then in conclusion, we're saying that we want to assure the committee that the issues raised in the State of the Nation address have been expressed in a form of tangible deliverables with specific performance indicators in the DCOG Annual Performance Plan 2011-12, and that progress against these plans is being monitored on a monthly, quarterly, and quarterly basis through formal review meetings that are taking place within the department. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Just to say that the... can we get, before the end of today, this report you say you've done on the page 4 there, at the... the top slide, the department has conducted an assessment and written a report on all legislation that impedes service delivery. Can we look at, can you give us that report by today? It would be useful just to look at it and assess it. Okay, that's useful. On page 5, what you say Ricardo will speak to, can we take that as part of the first item, or do we want to discuss it separately? You tell us. I mean, like, you can talk about it now or deal with it as part of the finances there.
You know, Chair, earlier on you were saying we should make a recommendation. If you really want coherence, I think we should, with your permission, of course, announce. Let's actually take the presentation on Millennium Development Goals, because the issues are really intertwined.
Yes, yes,
and then we can come to finances right at the end.
Okay. I agree with you. Let's
move to the next item then. Unless you have questions on this earlier part, members, otherwise I was going to suggest you move. That is,
yes, sir, and I do have questions here and comments, but if we're going to have questions and comments later on, if they are interrelated, I have no problem.
Good.
Otherwise, I do have.
All right. Which lawyer wouldn't have? Okay. Now, let's move to the next item then, the Millennium Development Goals, and then talk with the finance later. Thanks. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, colleagues. The Millennium Development Goals. Chair, a millennium is a very, very long time. You know, and I think people, when they look at Millennium Development Goals upon first impression, they think we have that long a period to implement some of these things. The stark reality is that we're talking about 2015, which is practically around the corner. So, you know, in the light of all the global economic challenges, we've emerged out of a recession, a global recession, you know, and all of those influences have impacted negatively on the entire world meeting the objectives of the Millennium Development Goals. So we've come out of a challenging period, but I think, you know, as a government, we forged ahead. We're trying to implement many of the targets we've set for ourselves. I think the separation between what my colleague has done previously in his presentation and what will come out of my presentation is really artificial, because it's actually one and the same thing. The Millennium Development Goals is just a description, or a different description, of what we're trying to achieve as a country. So I think up front I just wanted to move that separation, artificial separation, between what he spoke about in terms of what President Zuma raised in the State of the Nation address and what we're trying to achieve out of the Millennium Development Goals. Now, I'm not going to go into all the slides except to say that with slide 1, you will see that we've drawn much of the information from our Millennium Development Goal report, which was produced in 2010. But I will go beyond that, and I will also talk about interventions that we try to develop to accelerate the implementation of some of the strategies that we've developed to achieve the goals. I think, you know, what's important also to point out on slide number 1 is that really where the linkage comes in from a Department of Cooperative Governance point of view is really on goal number 1, and that's the eradication of extreme poverty and hunger. You know, I've unpacked essentially, you know, the statement on the MDG for South Africa, but I don't want to go into that because I think it's self-explanatory, and I think members are fully aware of all of these things. But what I really want to come to is how we tie the Millennium Development Goals to our work, number 1 as a government in the country, but I think number 2 also as the Department of Cooperative Governance. And I want to go straight to that particular slide, Chair, if the committee doesn't mind. MDG Goal 1 is eradicate extreme poverty and hunger. As you can see, it's to half between 1990 and 2015 the proportion of people whose income is less than $1 a day. That really speaks to, you know, the levels of poverty in the country that we're trying to address. I think number 2 is to achieve full and productive employment and decent work for all people, including women, youth, and young people. And I think, you know, the initial figure suggested that by that time we should try to halve unemployment, which is a significant target. We have now the new growth path out, which talks about 5 million employment opportunities. We know there are economists who are saying that by 2020, we should actually create 10 million employment opportunities, and so on. So there is a big debate about the actual target that South Africa needs, you know, to address unemployment and poverty in a sustainable way. But that's a different debate. I just want to come to what we are actually doing to start, you know, contributing to those targets. Half between 1990 and 2015, the proportion of people who suffer from hunger. Now, these afflictions are manifest at local level. And you, as our political leadership, I'm sure that when you engage with communities at local level, this is what you have to deal with on a daily basis. And this is what we deal with as a department on a daily basis. These things are not up in the air. It is actually the reality that people live in at grassroots level, and municipalities themselves, as the front line of service delivery, they deal with these challenges. So municipalities, provinces, national government, the entire system of cooperative governance has to deal with delivering on the Millennium Development Goals. So output, you know, we've tied our outcome 9, which arises out of the local government turnaround strategy. We've tied that deliberately to the issue of the MDG goal number 1 of eradicating extreme poverty and hunger. And if you can see, it speaks about a responsive, accountable, effective and efficient local government system. Flowing out of that is really output 2, and that's to improve access to basic services. That is part of our department's mandate, and that speaks to the delivery of infrastructure to ensure that people have access to basic services. Output 3, implementation of the community work program and the establishment of cooperatives. That is also one of the key programs that we deal with, and my colleague, Mr. Molefi, indicated that I'll elaborate more on that. And then they are actions supportive of the human settlements outcome. Now, again, you know, everything we do as a department and everything that's being done by municipalities speak to the needs of households. So the Millennium Development Goals, as articulated here with Outcome 9, speak to the needs of households. So, you know, the reason I'm advancing that particular point of view is that many times, you know, we think some of these things are theoretical. But as I indicated, it's actually people's lives right at the grassroots level that we try to effect with all of these initiatives. Chair, I don't want to go into all of the detailed statistics, which are at this, you know, in this point in time, but the links from our specific objectives. I want to go straight into the program in order to avoid a repetition of what's been indicated before. Let me skip that slide as well. Let me come to the community work program, which really at the moment is our department's major contributor to the issue of creating employment. From April 2010 to March 2011, the CWP achieved the following key performance targets. We've exceeded the target of creating 87,000 employment opportunities during that period, and we've created 89,689 work opportunities. Well, that was the level of participants in the program for the period April 2010 to March 2011. So we've actually exceeded, you know, our target in that particular case, or for this past financial year. 56 sites are established at the moment, and CWP has created the equivalent of 23,693 full-time work opportunities. Because if you look at CWP, it talks about 2 days of work per week at 60, and participants are paid at 60 rand a day. So if you reduce that to the full-time equivalent, the 69,000 participants actually means that we've created 23,609 full-time work opportunities, which is significant in terms of the unemployment challenge that we are faced with as a country. You know, in terms of the poverty measure of 100-day opportunities, and that is really the baseline, we've actually created 54,494 opportunities. So these are real work opportunities that we've been creating, and at the moment, we have about 60,000 people on site working in the CWP program. That is current. And we are very eager to expand that, and we are in fact working on creating 18 additional sites due to budgetary constraints. Instead of the normal 1,000 participants per site, we are looking at 300 participants per site, which if we are able to secure additional budget, we will upscale to 1,000 employees a site from 300. I think these are just general observations on the challenges we are faced with in terms of poverty reduction. You know, I've mentioned that, you know, globally we've come through a recession, but at the same time, it's not only the recession chair. I think structurally the world economy is somewhat deficient, and, you know, as developing countries, we have to ensure that we change the world financial system in order to ensure that, you know, as a group of countries, we benefit more from this very system that we contribute to in a very uneven way. But bringing that to South Africa, we are also saying that we've inherited structural challenges of poverty, unemployment, skewed patterns of ownership, and all of those things that we need to address. And these things will not go away overnight. These are things that we need to work at in a very consistent way. And, you know, the example that I used through the community work program is just one of the initiatives. And I'll come back to what we intend doing to address this in a more meaningful and sustainable way. I think we're also very aware of what came out over the past few days with regards to the work of the National Planning Commission and what the recommendations were, and, you know, all the issues they've identified through their diagnostic report of the South African economy, and I don't want to run through those, but I really want to get to, you know, what we're doing as a department. I think, you know, this is the crux of where I want to be. And in the MDG report of 2010, it is actually recommended that municipalities should focus on local economic development initiatives that are skills creating, employment generating, and domestic production and consumption promoting. Now, again, that is a mouthful, it is theory. But as a department, we have some few things up our sleeve, which I will announce to the committee now, in terms of how we intend addressing this. The new growth path itself, you know, it mentions local economic development. What we are trying to do now is to tie our initiatives into the objectives of the new growth path. And I think the first step in doing so is recognizing the role of the local private sector at municipal level to contribute to sustainable private sector job creation. I think that from the Minister of Finance, the Minister of Economic Development, and many others have recognized the role of the private sector in terms of contributing to sustainable job creation. The Community Work Program as part of the Expanded Public Works Program can only be a short to medium term initiative. Otherwise, it will become a drain on the fiscus in the long run. And South Africa does not have a sufficient tax base to expand employment at that level to create 5 million public sector or community work employment opportunities. I think the objective is that we must try to grow private sector employment opportunities in this country. So as a department, what we're saying, I think the first thing we're doing, we're trying to align our local economic development initiatives to the Millennium Development Goals as well as the new growth path. Now again, that is not sufficient to start impacting on employment creation. But it is an important precondition if we are to create critical mass as a country to ensure that we deliver on our jobs mandate. The colleague Molefe also indicated that as a department we intend establishing local economic advisory development councils in district municipalities. And the reason we've chosen district municipalities is that if you look at economic sectors, most of them cannot be contained geographically within local municipalities. They actually run across municipalities. And that is why we're looking at districts as a point of departure for local economic development. Because it just gives you more scale. And I think what local economic development in South Africa has lacked is the issue of scale. When people think of LED, they normally think of lower level economic development, and they think of small little projects somewhere like a chicken farm, a soup kitchen, sometimes even a creche. Because if you look at what many municipalities are doing around LED, it's all these small little unsustainable things. So what we're saying, if as a country we really want to have 5 million jobs by 2020 and even more, we need to start upscaling our initiatives. We will never meet our objectives if we only have those small little scattered projects at municipal level. So that's why we're saying let's use districts to give scale to our initiatives. But at the same time, let's recognize that there are existing industries at local level. In many areas, you have some of the world's best and highly productive agricultural concerns, commercial farming enterprises. Why don't we use those to create extra jobs? In many areas you have mining companies operating with some of the world's biggest mines. Why don't we use that to expand our economic base? And so we can go on agro-processing, etc. So what we're saying is let's use what we have and double the size of that, or attempt to double the size of that and create the number of jobs. So the idea is then to, along those agricultural, mining, and commercial value chains, to identify opportunities of scale, business opportunities of scale, where we can bring the private sector in through these advisory councils to say, instead of lamenting what government is doing or not doing at the local level, identify where the opportunities are locally, you as the private sector. Because you see, in the past, as government, as consultants, as officials, we've made a mistake and we thought we could identify these business opportunities by ourselves. Invariably, they lead to nothing. What we are saying, in collaboration with the private sector, let's use their access to finance, their balance sheets, let's use their distribution channels, let's use their access to markets, let's use their technology, their management expertise and all of those things, and let's use that to turn those opportunities into viable businesses in existing value chains. Those businesses then, Chair, can start creating the jobs that we require. Those businesses can create opportunities for small business. Those businesses can create opportunities for cooperatives and many other forms of enterprises. Those businesses can as well help us to reduce our carbon footprint. Now, we're talking about catalytic business ventures, in other words. We're talking about new business ventures that will create new jobs, not existing jobs. And those business ventures will then start to contribute to transforming the economy. Chair, we cannot change completely the economy by introducing a new policy. But the restructuring of the economy really starts with one business transaction, and that is why we're saying we need these business opportunities at the local level that can help us create jobs, that can reduce the carbon footprint, that can contribute to equity, that can, you know, meet so many other of our social objectives. But we need this on a large scale. As the department, we intend centralizing this, and as these opportunities come up, we will assist in linking these opportunities to get funding from the employment creation fund that government has just set up. We intend linking them to the IDC, to the DBSA, and even commercial banks. So it's going to be a large-scale exercise, and this, all of this, Chair, will be contained in a new framework for local economic development in the country. We cannot go on expecting small business on its own to deliver the 5 million jobs that we expect. Small business as part of a value chain can start contributing to that. But I think what we've ignored is the underlying role of the key drivers of economic growth, and that's the private sector. But again, like government, government always says we can't grow the economy on our own. Similarly with the private sector. So we need to build those partnerships. The expression of that partnership, again, is the local economic development advisory councils that we're trying to set up locally. And the actual implementation and job creation will take place through the catalytic business ventures that we're trying to promote. The department is focusing on that. So in order to really accelerate our efforts to attain these goals, we are saying this needs to take place at the local level. See, that's on the front of job creation. But I want to come to the issue of basic services. I think a couple of issues, and I didn't include this in the presentation, but I don't want to go back to what my colleague has said, because I don't want to repeat. I just want to focus on some of the new thinking that is taking place within the department. I think what we're also saying, Jay, is that with regard to municipal infrastructure and the delivery of basic services, water, electricity, sanitation, refuse, etc., we are saying that we need a national perspective, a national view that is consistent and coherent on municipal infrastructure. Now, already as a department through the municipal infrastructure grant, the department is contributing a great deal to achieving the Millennium Development Goals through the municipal infrastructure grant. Over the next 3 years, we are talking about expenditure for municipal infrastructure grant projects of over 35 billion rand. But again, that is not enough, and we've recognized that. So what we've done as a department, we've identified the need to investigate a better funding model for municipal infrastructure that is inclusive of all aspects of municipal infrastructure. And we thought that a bulk infrastructure fund could contribute towards alleviating the infrastructure challenge that we have at municipal level. But what we are saying is that we should maybe look at a more comprehensive response, including bulk infrastructure and using the municipal infrastructure grant as the primary vehicle. So we will look at the formula of the municipal infrastructure grant, that it is more attuned to the issue of indigent people, which is a key concern from the Millennium Development Goals. It's really how do we deal with indigent people. So the formula has to be changed to start speaking to that particular challenge of all municipalities. I think about 70 out of the 283 municipalities don't have a revenue base. So part of addressing the challenge is to look at how do we address the formula so that it can cater for those municipalities, but also for others. And there are some municipalities that also that don't have a revenue base, but they have the potential to build that revenue base, and that is what our local economic development initiatives will speak to. Because every municipality needs a viable economy to operate in so that they can have their own revenue base. And over the years, we can increase that so we can decrease the equitable share to those ones. I think, you know, just coming to the issue of planning, so what we are saying, Chair, is that we need a national master plan for municipal infrastructure, which deals with the funding issue, which deals with the issue of capacity building, which deals with the issue of skills development, but also, more fundamentally, which deals with the issue of municipal infrastructure planning and spending, because those are the key challenges that we have. And we need to identify a national response to the issue of planning, but also the issue of spending at a local level. And what we are saying, if you look at municipal infrastructure plans at the moment, comprehensive infrastructure plans, they are just a lump of projects. The projects are not part of a system. And we are starting to think of water systems at local level, electrification systems. We are talking about sanitation systems. So that when we get a project, it must actually fit into that system, which then becomes more sustainable. And those are some of the issues that we're trying to address in our current thinking. And very shortly, we will have a strategic discussion within the department to start addressing those things. Chair, it would have been futile if I went into what my colleague already presented, because much of what is in here, in my presentation, was covered in the solar presentation. And I didn't want to repeat that because I think, you know, it would have just wasted the time of the committee. But I think it's important that the committee is aware about some of the groundbreaking work that we're busy with as a department to start addressing the issues of the Millennium Development Goals, but also what the President highlighted as challenges in the State of the Nation address. Chair, if there are any other specific issues that you want me to go into, you're welcome to ask me.
Page 6, MDG 7, speak to that slide.
I think, Chair, you know, again, it is, you know, environmental sustainability is critical in what we're trying to achieve as a department. We put it at the core of our mandate. And we're saying from April 94 to March 2005, 2.4 million housing subsidies were approved and 1.74 million were built, arising out of, you know, what we're trying to achieve at household level. And this speaks really to the outcome on human settlements. Because what our department is doing, and my colleague indicated, that one of the initiatives is this joint MINMEC with the Department of Human Settlements, which we regularly have, but we've also established a task team or steering committee on the human settlement outcome. Are we on the right one? On the human settlement outcome. So again, Chair, it's about integrating the work of government in a very holistic way. And in our case, particularly the issue of basic services is tied to the issue of households and to the outcome on human settlement. We've indicated there that the UN notes that there have been significant improvements in improving access to basic services. It is not like South Africa has not moved at all. I think if you look at the levels of penetration of basic services, we are talking about 93% in the case of water. And we set a target of 96% for this financial year. Now, you can see the levels of penetration is high. But the question we're starting to ask ourselves, Chair, is the quality of services that we are talking about. And the quality of services, for example, I've heard on the radio the other morning that, yes, you know, people have access to a tap within 200 meters of where they stay. But in this particular case, in one municipality, more than 40 households, more than 40 families rely on one tap. Yes, it's 200 meters from within where they stay. You know, so we are meeting the target. But the quality of the service, and sometimes the tap is not even working. So that is really where the challenge is. And we've actually started the discussion about reviewing the norms and standards for basic services. So we should look at this thing of saying within 200 meters, and we should start unpacking that, so that when we deliver these services, we're actually talking about quality services at the same time. Or we should improve the basics to a higher level of quality, because at the moment it's very, very basic. And I think that is one of the first things we need to do in terms of addressing this. And that should go for all the other areas, for electrification, for sanitation, etc. We all know about the open toilet saga. Yes, you have access to sanitation, but it's open. So you know, the quality issues is really becoming very important. But we are also saying that we need sustained investments to strengthen environmental monitoring systems. And this is what came out of the UN report on the Millennium Development Goals for South Africa. It doesn't help that we still use unsustainable environmental practices. And I think there's a good opportunity for municipalities to start doing this. The department is considering at the moment, Chair, an initiative to draw municipalities into a clean and green initiative at the national level, where we will share best practices with them on using environmentally friendly practices when it comes to the delivery of basic services. We can see there that, you know, in terms of the targets that were set, Chair, that we need to reduce, emissions We need to ensure that we, protect our natural habitat, the forestry resources, and all of those things. And the last indicator there is just how likely we are as a country to achieve some of those targets. Now, again, we can fall back on many of these things if we don't keep our finger on the pulse, and because we can see there is likely possible, likely achieved, possible, etc. Because we're looking at water, we're looking at marine protected areas, etc. Because as a department, we're not squarely focused on our sole matters. We also look at other areas around, water, sanitation, electrification, etc. We're looking at environmental issues at the local level as well. Any other questions, sir?
Are you done?
Yeah, no, actually, as I indicated, Chair, this particular slide here, it was covered in the previous presentation. If you look at the performance there, if you look at the targets for the MTF period, in the case of water, we indicated what we want to do in terms of supporting municipalities with the building of substations electricity, etc. So I don't know if you want me to go into all of those things, Chair, at this stage.
Okay. Member, questions on this presentation?
Yes.
Okay. Let me start with opening Onyan, Lorima, Mashoba, the Republic of Emel. Okay, go ahead, member.
It's an honorable members and the TG and staff and guests. Good morning. Thank you very much, Chair. Am I going to have one bite or 10 bites or one?
My lordship.
Yes.
Ask many questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Yeah.
Briefly?
Okay.
Briefly. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you, sir.
If you can point be brief, that would be great. We still have an additional presentation of the finances.
Well,
let's spend a lot of time on that.
Point taken.
These are policy issues that we must talk to, which the finances must speak to. So let's be brief.
Chair, my questions and comments will cut across because I think the DG and the colleagues clearly indicated that they are after speaking to each other. So I'm not going to direct questions to Adam Lisi or Ricardo. So they must just be wild away. All of them feel free. First one. This word decock and remove tar. Why?
Okay.
Are you removing traditional affairs from this department? I'm talking to the traditional leader and the MP in a constituency.
Don't motivate your question.
Yes, yes. I just want them to be very clear. Why is that? And you'll find then that I've got discomfort about this emphasis on urban bias. Yes, you do say something about rural. That I could see that you're talking with passion insofar as cities and towns. I may be wrong. So when you answer that question, please report. Secondly, on the slide on poverty alleviation and job creation, on page 2 of the first presentation, you will of course read that with page 4 of the second presentation because they speak to each other. You are talking about the community work program and that at the world level. This is good. I would like you to unpack that. Coming from a constituency, I can only see a community development worker, one, no other person. The what? So please, if you can just explain, how does it work? Is it a domain of the municipal ward councillor? What is the role of traditional leaders, traditional councils, therefore, or the community in general around that very critical and important point? Then the next one, Chair, is on page 4, the first presentation. Around the issue of coordination efforts at a municipal level, I heard with some set of discomfort when it was said, it's not written, that you are merely coordinating and then it's not your primary responsibility. Perhaps I may have heard incorrectly. And then I asked myself, whose responsibility is then? Taking into consideration to you, Chair, that we did pass the IGR Act, the Intergovernmental Relations Act, which is administered by the department. And the key main objective of that act is to make sure that all the key departments are coordinated, called within the department. What you are also responding to that, because I also could see that the structure that you're referring to, now you're talking to the Department of Human Settlement, which is good. I don't get a sense whether you do have a formal IGR structure when you're dealing with these matters pertaining, of course, to the provision of the basic infrastructure. And of course, that is delivery. I'm broad there. I think the chairman has already taken the other point there. The other one, Chair, is the very next slide on the page 4, which should actually be read with page 6 of the next slide. This slide. It is about the issue of 2013-2014, the thing that we want to achieve, we said 93-96% sanitation water, but by then, 2013-2014, you give us a sense that yes, that is the target in terms of our own manifesto, our own contract, of course, with the electorate, which is very good. But how far are you? Is it achievable or not? What I'm there, or this achievable or not, I also noticed in one of the slides, I think it is on the second presentation on page 3 of the second presentation on those slides of the progress to date, eradicate extreme poverty and hunger. I see that in respect of share of forest quantity in national consumption, for instance, said unlikely. It's one of them. There are many unlikely. But what, if that is unlikely to achieve, then what is the strategy of the department to achieve that? Because it's critical. Okay, are you saying it's unlikely, therefore, what? What is going to happen about those things? Those that achieve are positive, I'm happy. But I would love to hear more on those that it is you are saying to us it is unlikely to achieve. And hope this last one, yes. On elimination of corruption, which is on page 5 in the fact. You're taking the point, which I agree, that the government established an anti-corruption inspectorate, which is fine. But what are you doing to eradicate this thing? I think 4 or 5 years ago, we have been advised by the department that there are monitoring mechanisms in place so that we can be able to intervene. I think the DGG was reported. I've just forgotten the term that they used, you know, to monitor this thing. Now, I can see that we are relying on an act that we have recently passed, which is still going to be accepted by the president, as if that is the only thing. I would think that by now there are other things, because corruption has been there, and our stance against corruption has been there for years. And I'm sure the department, in fact, has done something around that issue to eradicate corruption, so that there could be intervention in terms of the Act and the Constitution.
Thank
so
you very much.
That is all, sir.
Thank you very much. Next.
Mr. Hansley, you talked about LED initiatives, which are quite interesting. My first question is, why do you want to put them with districts? Districts don't exactly have a stellar record of being able to get anything together. One would think that you're putting them with districts so they went away and died. Secondly, I don't quite understand how these LED initiatives are going to ride off the back of private sector infrastructure. How are you going to persuade private enterprise to take part in these projects?
Since money to DG, we are using the work and job or opportunities. So when you check on page 4 and also page 2, I'm sorry, it's similar to what Nkosi chose. And then when you talk about this committee, welcome program, you are saying that person is 60 rand per day, which is 10 kg for a family of 7. What they are saying now, if you do that on TV, it's an embarrassment to the government. Even from the government point of view, we are going to pay the same for the citizen team, a family of nine people. That means a pocket of not even a 12 kg, 12.5, a 10 kg in the military team. What is that? Because then when we were presenting to us, we will ask you, when you have privatized everything for municipality, where we're going to provide the job now to the people? Because you started by privatizing everything to clean the space belongs to another company, to clean another thing in a municipality belongs to another company. Well, what are you saying that outside? When it comes to first phase, you talk about the roads. What roads are you talking about? Because there are those roads which belong to Nassau. There are roads which belong to the province. I'm talking about the roads which are belong to Kokta now. I'm from the village. Where there are no roads and at all. Leave the township and all that. Which roads I'm talking about? Because we keep on asking you questions, then we will come again. We say, yeah, doing this. Do us a favor, please, and then give us some day. So that we won't go back. In my village, there are no roads. The roads are, if the roads were provincial and not that, that's there. Same thing.
Thank you.
Thank
you. My question will be sort of a repetition from other comrades, but I'll put an emphasis on those, like the ones under MDG presentation under CPW program. Chair, I would like maybe to appreciate the initiative and the implementation of this project, and also just want to check the 23,693 that are on full-time basis. Are they working for 5 days in a week, or also receiving the very same salary of 60 rand per day that Honorable Machoba has alluded to? And also to check, because you said you'll expand the sites to 18, could you please make a breakdown of where will be the 18 be expanded or added places? And also to check, who is monitoring this CPW CWP program. Because I'll go back to the program Utata Kuluma Ngaye Lungelunge Lakho program on TV, which Gauteng people who are in this project were saying they were told by the ward councillor that they're supposed to receive 150 per day, but from the person from Public Works who was responding in that program explained it breakdown at that 150. Who's monitoring the project and who's taking the information down to the people as they make it breakdown from that 150, how much money is going to where until a person is left with 60 rand per day? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Porter, and then Lloyd Marty first, and then Porter.
Thanks, Jack. Most of my concerns have been raised, but if you look at page 4 of the presentation of the Millennium Development Goals, you probably find one slide talks to the other one because of the 60 rand a day. The next time we're talking about absenteeism and dropouts and so on. I do have a question, though. We're talking about 56 sites that are established. To my understanding, it was 300 per site. Am I correct in saying that?
No, for the 18 additional sites. Only for the 18. The 56 already have 1,000.
Okay. Yeah. Right, so that will answer it, because according to our mathematics, it didn't get to 86,000 at all. Further to that, we're talking about the local LEDs, and that it should be going to districts and so on. We always have this perception that bigger is better. I don't agree with that. I think local is lacquer. And I think we need to look at it from that aspect, because there's nobody better than the locals to know what the needs are in their communities, what should be done, how to assist. You're talking about big business being the ones that are going to be employing all these people. It's exactly the big businesses that have been retrenching huge amounts of people at one shot. But it was the locals and the little businesses that kept it sustainable and kept communities fed and kept communities going. And I think that's something that you need to look at. Bigger is not always better, and so there's no need for it to take it to districts. The locals know what to do.
I didn't raise my hand for questions, but I'll make a comment quick. Well, on this same issue of LEDs and districts, my understanding is that you can benefit from economies of scale if you raise certain types of services, like your water, your bulk infrastructure, to a district level, whilst you provide or you incentivize businesses to come to the local. Because your local won't be able to provide electricity, bulk water, solid waste disposal, and those types of things. But if you have those facilities available, because business follows infrastructure development, if there is no development, and this one question I want to ask is the department expecting that those TVBC states, municipalities, would develop automatically, regardless of the backlog that they inherited from the past? I know this, for me, is a stock question, because I keep on asking the same question. If you go to these TVBC states, or former TVBC states, they have never been at the same level as what was the white provincial administration of South Africa. Their level of development, if you leave them to look after themselves out of their own revenue, which they do not even have, they will never develop. So for me, I thought that there would be a once-off, at least investment, or rather fund set aside to jack up the infrastructure in those areas. Because even your N2, crossing over Butterworth, Aiduchua, Mthatha, is a disaster. Mthatha is supposed to be the biggest city in the Transkei, but the N2 is run down. And I'm saying, how do you upgrade? I mean, there's no, in fact, you can talk of potholes that are interfering with the tar road in the West Coast. And some of the tar road is more interfering with the potholes in Mthatha, because there's no real tar to talk about. It's more, the reality is that how do you then upgrade that city to a level where you would expect it to look after itself?
Because no investor is going to go to that city or town and invest there with that infrastructure that has completely been destroyed. And the population is ever increasing. Your urban growth is actually putting more pressure on a decaying infrastructure. What are your plans to deal with that situation and arrest that trend that is developing in many towns in the country?
I wasn't going to ask, but I'm going to comment. It's a fascinating one, yes. Okay. Just a couple of points I would like to raise. Let me start with the MDG 7. And in your discussions, because of your discussions between human settlements and water and environment, one of the missing things there, in my opinion, Mr. Regional Planner, there's no reference to integration. In other words, whilst we have provided services, including housing, in the past, it has not always, in the majority of instances, contributed to spatial integration. So what Honorable Botha is raising is that, in effect, we just literally reinforced in some sense some of the old patterns rather than undone them. There are a few good examples of integration. I know some, I worked in some, but they are few and too far between. So part of the work that I think needs to be done, when we don't integrate, we contribute towards some of the problems of environmental degradation and insensitivity towards building a more friendlier use of resources and so on, because we are contributing to urban sprawl and so on. So that's the one problem. That part I would like us to problematize it more, and then so that the recommendation we make from there is sensitive to that reality. So that's the one contribution I would like to make. And in fact, the correct identification of dependence on coal-based energy, and then I don't know whether in your recommendation you speak about increasing the quantum of resources on renewable. In other words, that's a good statement of the problem, bullet number 3, but is it opposite in the recommendation stated? It's not stated. So that would be a useful one there. Because we were saying, and for example, because we are dealing with local government in particular, that the non-grid initiative around energy, unless we at this level proactively communicate that and support that, it will not happen. Devon has done it because it had capacity to think about those issues and went on to take some of the initiative towards producing some form of renewable. There are other, Cape Town is also exploring wind farms and so on, those sort of initiatives, but we would like to see a more robust contribution in the opposite direction there as well. And then, still on human settlement, on housing, there are two things that I think it is possible to do, we are not doing. And this can happen as a matter, like they do in military run places, as a decree. That no house subsidized by government must not be energy efficient. It must face north. And we must insist that the materials that are used are environmentally okay. I'm just saying that some things, of course, it's not as simplistic as that, but I don't understand why we are not pushing much more strongly in that direction. That we could make a huge difference, because the energy consumption hit the poorest of the poor more because of not doing those things, when their resources should be going elsewhere. But they go into energy and so on, which is unfair. So I just think that area needs to be explored with much more energy and robustness than has been the case. Okay. Then the next thing, when you speak about bulk infrastructure, Ricardo, you mentioned a number of things there, about five things there. The question of funding, the question of capacity, skills, spending, and so on. I think we must link the provision of infrastructure to disaster management, including environmentally sensitive infrastructure provision. In other words, we must tie it. We must that is an area around which we also have a possibility to show integration. So we should be doing it there as well in very specific terms, because it will make sense to do it in advance as part of the package, and we must explicitly state it as such and demand that it is done. It must be approved or signed off only if it satisfies some of the criteria that it contributes towards proactive environmental protection and regeneration. And yes, so that's the one set of things that I thought I wanted to make. I also want to suggest that around local economic LED, you will respond in your own right to the conflicting positions that have been taken on LED. I think both are correct. Both positions. In other words, they are not contradictory. There are those things that are correct that can be done at the local level and so on, that are of an economic nature, but others are best suited at a higher level. Not all of them, clearly. So I think a more integrated approach is the most appropriate one, rather than either or. You know what I mean? And I agree that in the early 90s, let me put it that way, one of the observations by one of the most creative thinkers around small business and its contribution towards jobs was the observation of how few small businesses were there in South Africa, generally speaking. But you see, the assumptions behind that must also be questioned as well. So what I'm saying is that the incubation strategy that we say we need to up in our country is going to happen best there at a local level, at a district level, that you provide people with opportunities to be incubated and over time be moved to scale and so on. Not everyone is going to go up to scale. You will always have some operating at a small scale and so on. So we mustn't also put up expectations that will not be fulfilled by everybody. So and in the support systems that we provide them with that view in mind, that there are others who will grow big, but there are others who will stay small, so to speak. It must inform our. And my final point around that is that I really, and it is not a different point, it's just that they, like we argue about the new growth path, that green must not be something that is done separate. The entirety of economic activities must be green, in a sense. And government must use its negotiating power to achieve that goal. We have been told straight in our faces in many forums in the past that government is a very poor negotiator. It doesn't use its resources appropriately to achieve progressive goals, such as water harvesting, water saving, such as energy using and so on and so on, that the people you do, if I may use that phrase, business with, are environmentally protective. You don't continue to do business with people who are fragrantly messing up the environment in their practices. So you you incentivize them. You do business with us, you better be clean. Like they say in Curitiba, to anybody and everybody, in Curitiba, you don't lead. In Curitiba, you don't occupy a pitch, a football pitch. You know what I mean? So it's that sort of thing that I'm saying that I think it would be okay. In your home, if your home is a no-smoking zone, it's a smoke-free zone, you don't allow someone with a pipe, no matter how respectable he is, to smoke in your house. They know you won't do that. They'll walk out to go and smoke outside and so on. So I think, especially linked to what you call LED, but also it is important that it would be, what is the word, unrealistic to talk about LED unlinked to the provincial and national economic programs as well. They will not survive. It is completely just unrealistic, because for them to be really meaningful, they have to be linked to that. They are, in any case, linked indirectly to the bigger scale of things and so on. So what gets done at the macro level either has a facilitating impact or a negative impact on the ground. So those linkages, there are those that are very positive and useful, but then there are those that are negative and we should deal with and so on. So my argument is that we should insist on, for example, serious promotion of zero waste. You know what I mean? Or if it's not zero waste, reduce, reuse, recycle. That's a requirement in every economic activity that we have. It must not only be for certain things, but as a specific requirement for doing stuff. Let's integrate that in the work that we are doing. So that would be how I would suggest we handle the movement towards more environmental protective and regenerative requirements for work at the local level. I agree that I was going to give you information. You probably know, I don't know, that as we speak, there is someone from Manenberg doing a presentation in the Portfolio Committee of Public Works on this issue of the 60 rand story. And someone who is appeared to be having his fingers in the till problematically, and is funded by COCTA through the Community Works Program, and it is this 50 rand story as well. And part of the complaint is not just the 50 rand, but also the person you are funding through EBA or whatever it is, we don't know how that operates, you'll get information about that. There's a big by people who are operating in Manenberg raising questions about this thing. So COCTA is going to have to attend to it. We will link you with that, with those people too, so that you take up their case. If this person is really, truly oily fingers, you must be cleaned quickly in the interest of communities and so on. So please take that up there. Yeah. Okay.
One person said that. Okay.
Thanks, Chair. Mine is on page 4. When I was in human settlements, the portfolio committee, and then I've asked this question, where do we get these figures? Water, 90%, sanitation, 70%, and then water. They said, no, they bought it from you. Because one has to know exactly where do they get this percentage. Of course, I know that you do meet them as human settlements, whatever. They said, no, they are getting for you. They said, we inform you about the figures. It was the human settlements. I knew that I belong also to culture. Where do we get the figures? Maybe they are right, maybe they are wrong, I don't know, but let's hear from you.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
I think it's part of
commercial. I've forgotten on my speaking slots to mention this.
Yeah, but not raise your voice even if it's a commercial.
It's helping me. sorry, my apologies for coming a bit late in the committee, but I just want to announce in the committee that two cakes there, it's for that much over your 5th birthday. Happy birthday.
That's a cakeful announcement. Okay. This is a very interesting intervention. Why are you softening them? That there's a cake for them. Okay.
Thank you. Maybe the atmosphere is one of the French Revolution that we're in. People shall eat cake. Now, I thought, Chair, maybe let me start. Let me make one or two response to one of the cross-cutting issues, and my colleagues will come in and deal with some of the specifics. About three or four issues I'm just starting with. Let me start with the issue of the department. As the Honourable Member was speaking, I was just checking the invitation from the committee, and the invitation was sent to the Department of Cooperative Governance. I think the committee should now be aware that we've got two departments in one ministry. So I think, in fact, we were actually talking about this, Chairperson, and maybe we should have interacted with you, because in many instances we should actually come as both departments. But clearly, many of the deliverables and outcome 9 specifically resides within this department. So that's simply a technical point about that we definitely are not abandoning traditional affairs. There's a separate department on that. I think the most substantive point that was made, which I think we must always be alive to, is this perception and maybe the reality, and then hopefully we are trying to deal with that reality, is the issue of the urban bias. We are very much aware of that particular challenge and problem, and all of us in government are really committed to rural development. And I think maybe one of the things we should do in future is to actually to come and talk about how we are trying to give effect to that particular priority. In fact, maybe let me just mention one or two right now. You know, the one thing that we hopefully are trying to make a contribution to in dealing with our rural development challenge in this country is the way in which money flows to our small rural municipalities. That is one of our contributions. So one of the things we are planning, Chairperson, Honourable Members, in the next 6 to 8 weeks, we are actually planning an intergovernmental fiscal relations summit where we're going to look at the entire intergovernmental fiscal regime in this country. It's a workshop we are planning together with Treasury, with the Presidency, and so on. And we really want to interrogate the assumptions, the models, the formulas that sit behind the way in which government flows, especially in terms of how it impacts on the local government. So I'm saying that is one particular intervention that we think we've got more direct control over, and we can make an impact on that. So that was one issue. The second issue that was raised also was this issue about what is our role, and again, you know, it is again always a chicken and the egg situation, this thing about our coordination role as a department. I think, yes, it is correct that we continue to assert and argue that our role as a department is primarily that of being a coordinator in government. Making sure that different sectors come together and they come with a package of services that make sense to different provinces and municipalities. And the primary platform that we always argue must pull that together is the IDP. But we all know that historically remains one of our biggest challenges in this country. And maybe, Chair, again, if I can just push the boundary a little bit, maybe we need to even think about strengthening our development planning legislation to kind of enforce that, because the lessons of the last couple of years since 2000, you know, we've been talking, we've been having guidelines, we've been, you know, having workshops, but really we continue to have that particular challenge. So the first point I'm making is that we see ourselves just as playing that coordination role. But at the same time, there are things that we are directly responsible for, and we cannot run away from those things. And some of those things are the things that we've spoken about, the MIG grant, CWP, and so on. So in those examples, we are directly responsible for resources, for instruments, for programs that impact directly on the ground. Now, still on the issue of coordination, you know, one of the, I think there was a question around how we give meaning to this thing of the single window of coordination and how the thing of coordination comes out in practice. In the area of service delivery, and I'm just giving a different example of how we're trying to do this, the DG of Human Settlements and myself, the two of us jointly chair a task team of government, and again maybe we must think about the way in which we call the names of these structures, but for now it's called a task team. It comprises of all the key sector departments, you know, water affairs, energy, transport, etc., where we regularly meet, and the central question we're asking ourselves is how do we need to coordinate our different programs to work towards this target of sustainable and integrated human settlement. So again, that is a very deliberate attempt to coordinate key sectors that impact on the lives of our people when it comes to the issue of basic services. So the actual program that we have, we actually have a joint program of action where all these relevant sectors have committed themselves to this joint program of action. But it is ourselves and human settlements that kind of drive this quite hard. Let me come to another issue quickly, inspectorate. In the past, what we have primarily done as a department, we have received allegations, we've received correspondence, we've received information around all sorts of funny things happening in our municipalities, and our predominant response up until probably last year has been of referring that information to the province, to the relevant MEC, COPTA MEC. In other instances, we've referred it directly to the office of the Premier, and even in other instances, we have referred it to the relevant mayors. Now, our assessment has been that particular process has really not worked. We refer these things, and we don't get reports, and we don't know what has happened to these things. There have been a few instances where we have tried to have these discussions with the SIU, but the milestone has been when we adopted the turnaround strategy, we then made a very decisive decision that said, let us establish our own capability to deal with this issue of fraud and corruption. Now, let me start off by saying what this inspectorate is not. This inspectorate is not a prosecuting authority. It will not have the powers authority to kind of do that. But what we do believe this inspectorate should do is at least two things. One, it should be able to receive these allegations, this information, and even proactively go out and get some of this information. And in getting that information, we will work very closely with the relevant law enforcement agencies. In fact, we've already signed a MOU with the SIU in this country to assist us in monitoring this big grant called the Municipal Infrastructure Grant. So that's already one example of how we want to follow the money that we're giving to municipalities around MIG. So the first role of the inspectorate is to gather information, make sense of it, and then pass it on to the relevant law enforcement agencies. The second key role must continue to be that of advocacy, capacity building, promoting ethical behavior and supporting municipalities to prepare anti-corruption plans and an anti-fraud plan. So, and that, by the way, is something that we have been doing in the past, and we do have information that we can share with the committee how we've been working with municipalities to kind of do that. So those are some of the comments around the inspection. And I should say that we have recently appointed a head, and we also appointed one or two people to support that person, but we're very much in the early stages. So if there are proposals in terms of how we can really make this inspector to be functional and effective, we would appreciate some of those comments. The other comment I wanted to make quickly before I stop for now, it was this comment around how do we intend to support municipalities that fell under the previous Bantustan areas. Now, the example I was giving earlier was this example of how we want to re-look at the way in which money flows to different parts of the country. So I can assure the honourable member that when we talk about reforming, improving the intergovernmental fiscal regime, what we have in mind at the end of the day in practice is how those municipalities can get more resources from the fiscus. because one of the problems that we acknowledge is that many of them don't have a revenue base, they don't have a viable economic base, and therefore we believe that that national government needs to bias its resources much more. But in addition to that, the other discussion around the special purpose vehicle, just talking about the issue of resources, we are very clear in our heads that this special purpose vehicle that is meant to support municipal infrastructure primarily will be focusing on those smaller rural municipalities in building their kind of capability. So again, this is another attempt to kind of focus on them. The third example I want to make is an example of a project that we have in our department called the Small Towns Regeneration Project. And again, it is early days, but we have a kind of a program proposal whereby really we feel we need to have a very specific intervention where we can demonstrate that we are able to work together very closely with some of these small towns through a multiple range of initiatives, infrastructure, LED, reforming the kind of the way in which money flows, and really begin to turn those areas around. You know, just tomorrow, Wednesday, I'm actually going to visit Umtata KSD, and I've got a meeting there with the municipal manager, and I'm going to be looking at exactly at these things. His point on the agenda is a very simple one, and he says to me, he wants me to coordinate support from national government to his municipality, and I'm saying that is exactly what our role is, to go there to understand the multiplicity of challenges and how we can support. So, Chair, let me stop with those general cross-cutting comments. Let me get my colleagues to come in on the more specific ones, and with your permission. Thanks.
Okay, Chair, before you do that, there are a couple of points I wanted to make, that I intended to make that. The first one is about the impact of the global crisis on South Africa. And this is in relation to our ability to achieve Millennium Development Goals. Ricardo, I think you mentioned this point. But you see, we have to really concretely point out there are two parts to it. That it makes less money available on the one hand. Secondly, it does what Marty correctly points out, that some people have lost jobs because of the economic crisis. And that's a very important part of the reality that we have to work with. And the reason I'm citing it is that UNICEF, for example, in its report, raises this particular point as one of the unfortunate, reality that leads to the inability of government to support children and other NGOs that support children to suffer resource constraints because of the crisis. So in a sense, you have this reality that we are dealing with. So my earlier comment about the macro strategies that we adopt must help us to generate more resources to deal with the problems that we are confronted with, because they will not yield to any other responses that are not informed, not only from the local, no amount of local creativity will solve the problem that at their heart, they're actually global in nature. And so we need both a local, but particularly so, a strategy that deals with what is decided at a national level in our own country to respond to the resource constraints that faces communities. What Honorable Porter is also referring to is there's an interesting research that speaks about the, if we do not attend to the planning decisions we are doing today, we are going to reinforce the current fragmented nature of our country for centuries to come. So to undo that, we have to attend to the planning decisions that we are making now, and they include the deployment of the resources, because it is those resources that really make a difference to how ultimately we affect the impact that we are doing. And I'm being lobbied here that your relationship with rural development, DG, my own sense is that as MECs, we sign off on these IDPs. So the requirement for them to speak to the rural hinterland of those areas we are signing off on as MECs. So as a point of leverage, Isn't that the space, or you've said you've written through and so on, you know, getting joy and so on, you need your own capacity. But I also think that at the min-mac level, we need to find explanations. Why are you signing off IDPs that are not fulfilling nationally agreed objectives? Why are you signing off on those? Because I think that's what we should be talking about. And then think about sanctions. Serious. That we can't allow people to continue to speak to them. We have communicated to the rural department, both the minister and deputy minister, that unless the work they are doing speaks to, is integrated in the IDPs, as the name of those planes implies, they will not fly. They will not see the light of day. No amount of tap dancing around goats and cattle will produce the result they want to achieve. So the integration that happens both at a national level, including at all other levels, will make the biggest difference around those areas. I just wanted to make the
initial comment that we need to, our ability to achieve the Millennium Development Goals also depends on the resources that are made available from here, from at the national level. Okay. Okay, Ricardo.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think all the comments and questions are very valuable, and you know, they take us closer to resolving some of these things, in particular the last one that you've made now, and I want to work backwards with some of the responses. I'll just cluster some of them together so that I don't take up too much time.
Yeah, and be brief. Don't
I'll be very brief.
Too much
yes. Yeah, okay. I think in terms...
That's reserved for the Chair.
Yeah, no, well, Chair, I respect your position. So, Chair, I think in terms of IDP's integration from national right down to the bottom, that more of that, you know, will not be enough in terms of solving the problem. There is already too much fragmentation, and we need to bring everybody together, but more so at local level, where it really matters. I said in the Minmec the other day, it doesn't help if we just talk here, but at local level, we don't see it. And in fact, the initiative with KSD that the DG will address is exactly where we're trying to take everything to the local level where it matters. You know, so the relationship with rural development is also critical in terms of dealing with the rural development issues and the spatial issues and so on. The bias, again, is not towards big towns as far as we are concerned. We're trying to reach out to the whole of the country in the process. And the economies of bigger towns and of metros, you know, they're already well developed. So a lot of our intervention will be in districts in rural areas, but I'll come back to that. The issue of the impact of the global recession on our ability to implement the interventions to achieve the goals, I think we need to look into that a bit more deeper. But I think it's also clear that there are clear resource constraints as a result. The number of indigent people increased. As soon as that increases, it has implications for the amount of money that we have to give to local government. So I think we are yet to see some of the repercussions of the recession, because I don't think, you know, we will see some of the effects still for a few years to come in the process, but we need to point that out. Chair, I want to deal also with the issue of, you know, the CWP specifically. Just to indicate, the issue of the 60 rand a day that people get paid, it is a wage determination made by the Minister of Labour, which is in line with the prescripts of the Expanded Public Works Programme. Because the Community Works Programme is a component of the Expanded Public Works Programme. So that wage determination is made at that level. It was 50 rand a day, and for this year it has been increased by another 10 rand to 60 rand. Now, obviously it doesn't address the issues of poverty and hunger at that level. But I think the rationale behind it is a short-term intervention to at least allow people to have something on the table, you know, albeit that one packet of mealie meal. We can't with 60 rand solve all their problems. But I think as a contribution, what the government is saying, we don't have all the resources, so we have to stretch this. And I think the principle is also is once you start going over 100 rand a day or 150 rand a day, for example, then you start competing with the formal labor market. And I think government doesn't want to go, because this is essentially almost like a subsidy, which allows people as well at the same time to get experience so that they can enter the formal labor market. We are introducing measures to start training some of the people at local level on a mass scale so that we can upskill them and to prepare them for the formal labor market. That's why we're saying CWP in the long run is not going to be sustainable because it's not affordable to the state to expand employment at that level to 5 million people. But we are saying as an initial intervention, this is what there is, and it comes out of the expanded public works program. So it's not, you know, in our case specifically as DCOG that we are saying people should get 60 rand. It's in line with the prescripts of the Expanded Public Works Program, which is a national program.
So the gentleman that should be
it's a kind of question, because now there's a middleman that will be precise. If you are saying 60 rand is from Department of Labor, but there's a middleman who's getting this money and saying now for the administration is so much and so much. If you were saying it's 60 rand, 60 rand, but now there's a middleman who could get this money, 150, and then it comes down to the 60. If you were to say, well, for a person, 150, there's a middleman another 10. We must say it's a 60 rand for a person. There's a middleman. If you cut down the middleman, that person will be able to get them better. If you cut down, people cannot take them upon yourself, the administration, and instead of giving to somebody else.
Okay. Che, I was going to get to the breakdown of the amount specifically. Now, what happened in the case of Gauteng, in the case of that particular site? The Gauteng Department of Economic Development, I think, made an announcement that people are getting 150 rand, and it was a communication error. They admitted to that. Hence the program. But now we created that expectation in people's mind that we are talking about 150 rand a day, which was not the case. In fact, the 150 rand is an indicative amount of the total cost per opportunity. Now, the cost per opportunity is comprised, yes, of, you call it the middleman, we call it the implementing agent. All right? Now, the implementing agent, their role, because you are talking about a huge number of people, they have to run the systems to manage these people, find work for them, the logistics, the payment systems. Now, these things cost money. Now, you must remember CWP is a pilot program that came from the presidency to this department, and it's been in existence only for a few years. So, in the process now, we've actually found out that some of the costs are a bit too high, and that is agreed. But the fact is, if we as government run those systems, it becomes exceedingly difficult logistically to manage 60,000 and in the future hopefully over 100,000 people on our books. It also means that when we engage with people at that level directly, we immediately increase the size of government, because now they contract with government directly, and that is a big difference. And once they are contracted into government, it opens another whole chapter of labor relations issues that we have to deal with, because they are entitled to certain other things now. Then the cost per opportunity would even be more. But at the same time, apart from the implementing agents, there are also site costs. And site costs include materials. Those people can't work without brooms. They can't work without paint. They can't work without cement. They can't work without protective clothing and gear. All of those things makes up that 150 rand. So it's the cost per opportunity. You know, it's not the total wage cost. 60 rand is part of that, obviously, a significant part of that 150 rand. But as I said, the 150 rand is an indicative cost. We are yet, as we go on with the program, to identify what the actual costs are. So I'm just giving that perspective. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just giving the perspective on the breakdown. And we will look into how we can constantly increase the amount, but we are concerned as government that at a certain point you are starting to compete with a formal labor market if you pay people too much as well. This is a platform for people to start to earn something, but also to gain work experience so that they can enter the formal labor market more equipped. Chair, I also want to deal with the issue of LED, which I think, you know, came out. I think there was a slight misunderstanding. It's not an either-or situation, small business versus big business. I think, just to explain around the issue of small business, there is a perception that small business, as a generic concept, will relieve the economic woes of South Africa. Yes, small business will, but certain categories of small business. And what we are talking about is small business in the productive sectors of the economy. Not your typical flea market, one-man operation.
One-person operation.
Yeah.
Yes, one-person operation. Their ability to grow beyond one-person operation is very limited. The small businesses that typically grow are those in a value chain that supplies a bigger company with something. So it is part of, you know, it is based on the underlying economics of the country. It is not based on a simple opportunity that arises because people are forced to sell something on the street. So there is a big difference between small and small, because you get survivalists, you get small, medium, etc. So we must distinguish between all of those. And what we are saying is based on the economics of our country, we need a different approach. And the approach is essentially where we say we create bigger opportunities that provide value chains for small business to supply into. Because remember, without a mine, you also can't get the suppliers to the mine, which are smaller businesses. And that's essentially what we're saying. So you need to catalyze the economy in order to achieve the higher level growth of 7 to 8. We are talking even about 10% now that is required in order to start addressing the unemployment backlog that we have. Otherwise, we're never going to get there if we just want to develop small business in isolation by itself. So it's that combination. At the same time, through every business venture we are talking about, we need to talk about green economy issues and build it in. Because they need to be compliant with our wishes as a country in terms of reducing our CO2 emissions and all of those things. So yes, we must take that on board in everything that we do, and we can't artificially separate them from the new growth path and then have the green economy as something separate. You are absolutely right, Chair. They need to be integrated. The question also came up whether the private sector at that level will buy into this growth initiative. The fact is there is so much goodwill at local level that we haven't tapped into it. I think the captains of industry, commerce, agriculture at that level, they want to live in a country that is prosperous, that offers more business opportunities, bigger markets, etc. It's a question of this level of mistrust between government, starting right at the top, down to the bottom. There is a mountain of mistrust between business and government. And that is the downfall of South Africa in terms of economic growth. We need to bring the two together, Chair. And structurally, we are saying, let's create this forum. This has been done before. It's not something new. You know, I've actually personally worked on setting it up and tapping into that good work at the local level. So I'm not sucking it from somewhere, it's actual. Districts, the reason we're saying districts, yes, we cannot tamper with the constitutional mandate of local government to play a role in the developing their local economies. But what we are saying, if you look at economic sectors, which we are talking about, if you look at the new growth path, we are talking about sectors. Sectors are not contained within a locality. Sectors typically run across a district. Now, even in districts, you know, are not the optimal measure for determining where an economy or where a sector is located. But we are saying to start addressing that. we need to look at districts as a point of departure. This issue of saying that districts are not playing a role, what we are saying is, let's start using them to play a role. And we are defining what they should do in terms of economic development. We can't complain and say, yeah, districts, you know, they mean nothing. We must use them. We must think, what, you know, this is what we want them to do. So it's a question of utilizing that capacity at that level, or starting to develop that capacity and ensuring that it takes place. Districts by themselves will not be able to bring the private sector to the party. You actually need skilled facilitators as well from a national level. And this is the departure that we have, Chair, when we talk about developmental or the developmental state. We will no longer assume that local government will just do something if we say they must do so. We must go there to support, we must go there to assist, we must go there to assist and to monitor and evaluate. We must sometimes help them and hold their hand and assist them to put these things together. So we're not going to leave them alone and expect them to go and engage the private sector there. No, we will walk the path with them, you know, in the process. So, Chair, that's with regards to local economic development districts and all of those things. You know, just with regards to the municipal and the issue of infrastructure, I think, Honorable Bota indicated around how business follows infrastructure. I think that is very true. In most cases, if you don't have the infrastructure developed at local level, business will not follow, and these municipalities will not develop a viable revenue base. So it's a question of ensuring that in these neglected areas that we prioritize infrastructure planning, capacity and actual spending in those municipalities, so that, you know, the business opportunities can follow with that and can be unlocked in the process. It is an enabler. Infrastructure is the backbone of the economy. But infrastructure development is not economic development per se. You need to develop businesses. Businesses create jobs. And you do that on the back of the infrastructural backbone that you develop. That's why we need to look at the big formula to also include economic infrastructure in a bigger way. At the moment, it mostly speaks to households directly. But households won't be able to pay for services if you don't develop economic infrastructure that brings businesses, that brings jobs in order for people to pay. So on that particular issue, Chair, I think, you know, there are certain linkages that we need to explore. And I think that's the key word, it's the linkages. If we can't identify the linkages at local level, then we will have failed in our duty. Chair, I don't know if I've missed some of the issues, in terms of the... I just wanted to appease the member there. We are not disregarding local initiatives, etc. But you must remember, most of the LED projects in the country that we spent millions on, they are not standing today because of their nature, their scale, their structure, and so on. When we talk about these businesses, they must be properly structured, professionally. I'm talking about, you know, bringing merchant bankers in, people with the right skills, to start doing these things. Otherwise, we will miss the opportunity to really grow the economy, but at local level. You know, that factory that we're talking about is going to be in the locality, so local will be better.
With respect, don't underestimate the locals.
No, we're certainly not doing that. But we're saying they are the beneficiaries.
Yeah.
They are the beneficiaries in this process, and we are doing all of this for them at the end of the day. I think the dependence on coal base, which you've raised, Chair, energy, it is a big concern, and we must look at alternative technologies to start addressing the issue of renewable energy. There are so many other things, but I want to stop there, Chair. Thank you.
Go ahead, Ed, and then we must move to the next, the finances, talk about the finances for the next hour here. Yeah. Go ahead.
For my information, when I've been asked, I want the first day permanent
Okay. Yes, Chair, I think, again, I didn't explain properly. The 23,000 permanent work opportunities, not separate. What we're saying is the actual amount of 60,000 people, if you look at the number of days they worked, it is reduced to 23,000 actual working days that people have done. So if you have to equate it to permanent jobs, only 23,000 people would have been employed with that kind of money. That is what we say. But we're stretching it because of the 60 rand a day issue.
That comfort zone is problematic. I don't think we should do it with what would have happened. I know we want to do that, but I think we must just state the reality of what has happened, what is planned to happen, saying people are going to be employed only for 2 days per week, and not more than that for how long is that going to be? Something that's the sort of answer that we are asking. So that we don't create expectations that we're not be fulfilled. Yeah, Honourable Martin.
Thank you, Chair. Just to add on to that, I think if we're talking about the employment of the 2 weeks, and the reasoning behind it, that the 60 rand is because of the skills training and skills transfer, etc. Now, if you work 2 days and somebody else works another 2 days and somebody else another day, where is the skill transfer continuity? You're missing key factors in the chain. So what kind of skills are we transferring? Half-baked ones?
No, Chair, I just said 2 days a week, but it's actually for a full period, depending on the life cycle of a site. It can be a year. It's normally a year, but it can go beyond a year, depending on the availability of sites. We can't give, there should be sites within, identified within a particular area where people do certain activities like caring for, the sick and the elderly, assisting with cleaning roads, and there are a number of food gardens, a number of other activities which participants perform.
Yeah.
So once they've addressed, say, for example, the cleaning and greening of a town, we can't keep on giving them money if there's no work. But typically it takes a year, and it could be more. So we've budgeted so that people can stay on for as long as possible on the program until such time that the economy can absorb them into more permanent employment. And that is the idea behind it.
Okay.
Sorry, Chair, but in the presentation it says it's 100 days a year. There's 100 days per year, per participant. That doesn't give you a year.
Yeah.
Let's leave it, otherwise we want to open the kind of
example. Yeah,
okay, let's leave it.
Okay, yes, put your answer, it's all right, yeah.
No, in terms of the 100 days, it's stretched over here. It's 2 days a week. People are not working every day. It is simply not a full... I'm not justifying the scheme, I'm just explaining how it is.
Yes.
Two days a week, 60 rand a day, and 100 days per year. So it stretched out over that period.
Oh yeah, so that you should clarify that it doesn't sound like it's every day of the 365 days. That's what a year implies.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right. No, honorable member, wait. Let's produce the evidence for corruption and talk about it as such here. Okay. Yes.
You wanted to say something.
Okay, again, you can advise. I mean, there are a couple of other things that were not responded to. I know we were not dealing with everything, and I thought I should still try and quickly fill out some gaps. But it's up to you.
Okay. Okay. And then we'll, yeah.
Okay. You know, Honourable Chair, the first thing I thought I should say is that, if your budget allows, you should take your committee to go and visit some of these sites. I've been to two sites. And the one site we went to, it was really, really impressive what is happening there. From a range of different perspectives. It was an old school that they were converting into a community, multi-purpose community centre. They have a very kind of interesting steering committee made up of different sectors, from the youth to ward committees to the schools that were sitting on that steering committee. They were able to explain the benefits. People were speaking independently there. They even have a creche on site. All I'm saying, Chair, you have to go there. Just go to some of these sites to see that. So that's the first point. Second quick point around LED. I mean, I thought I must just say this. Now, my colleague obviously was at pains to explain some of the kind of the new thinking around LED and the fact that private sector must drive the employment creation and so on. But what he did not explain, and I'm not going to bore the committee on, although I need to make this point, is that we've actually come a long road with our understanding and our approach to LED and the role of municipalities in LED. The chair may remember at some point in time, early in 2000 or late 1990s, we actually had an LED fund, a small pot of money. It wasn't a lot of money, probably about 5-6 million rand, but we used some of this money to give to municipalities to have LED projects. But looking back, the fundamental failure, it is it was completely dealing from the private sector, completely dealing from what was happening in the market, and we found the municipalities really engaging in this one-person type operations, completely unsustainable, survivalist type of activities, and really the kind of big lesson was that we need to start thinking differently, we need to start thinking about partnerships, we need to start plugging it into the economy as a whole. So the simple point I'm making is that there is a history where we've learned some very hard lessons as government, and obviously the fact that we've got a new framework now really assists us to better locate our LED work within that. So I thought I must just make that comment about where we've come from. The other quick point that I should make, and I really don't want to leave the impression that this is something that we support or we promote explicitly. The work that municipalities are meant to be doing in terms of rendering services to our people, it is definitely not premised on the notion of our municipalities needing to privatize the work. That is absolutely not government policy. Again, we can go back into history and we can explain portions of the Systems Act that were very carefully crafted, and I'm going to be very blunt about it, carefully crafted to ensure that the preferred way of providing any municipal service must be by the municipality itself, internally resources. But at the same time, we did create scope for municipalities to enter into partnerships and to get in private. Exactly. I mean, I was trying to avoid all the technical language. But the point is there is scope through a particular process where municipalities can pull in outside partners. But the predominant policy position is certainly not one of encouraging the privatization of our work of municipalities. I thought I might just say that explicitly. The point around LED and bigger and smaller and locals and so on, I just wanted to give a small example which makes the point that the chairperson made. I wasn't going to make it the way in which he said that there's no contradiction. But we have, over the last couple of years, we've been working very closely, and this is in practice, this is not theory. We've been working very closely with the Afrikaanse Handels Instituut. And what we've been doing with them, we've been going to individual small towns in this country, we meet with local chambers, and we enter into a partnership with them in terms of how we can tackle and start one or two very specific projects. Not province-wide, not even region-wide, based on a very specific town in this country. And we can give you examples of that. So I'm just saying that we have tangible experience in terms of how, as a department, we've been trying to promote working with organized business in very specific locations. I thought I must just make that point. The last point I want to make is linked to the environmental side of things. Chair, I kind of want to say that this is an area of work that we have not sufficiently and adequately given proper attention to. Let me start off by kind of saying that. But going forward, one of the opportunities that we think we have, and I'm about to have a meeting with the DG of Environmental Affairs on this, is the upcoming COP 17 conference in Etiquette, Durban. And we see many opportunities to catapult our municipalities literally into the front line in terms of how they can become much more environmentally conscious, sustainable in terms of how they can do their work. And again, I'm not going to get into the detail, but in agreement with what colleagues are saying in the meeting, is saying we can link a number of things. We can link planning, we can link disaster management, we can link the delivery of infrastructure services. There are lots of things that we can link, and I think this is a major opportunity that we have, and hopefully by the time we come to the committee, come back to the committee in a couple of months' time, we can begin to talk about some of these concrete things that we've agreed to on that particular area. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. This is a national event. Just like the World Cup, there's a report produced that speaks about the green legacy of the World Cup. Members must get hold of it. I haven't read it. I've looked it. I've got it in my pocket somewhere. I must read it. Now, the one of the usefulness of this international event, it's not run by South Africa. We are just hosts. It's run by the United Nations. because of its global reach and presence in the media, it gives us an opportunity to raise the level of consciousness of actors about green issues. So that's its first usefulness. So in a sense, that's a very crucial thing to do in advance as part of the work that they're going to be doing, the new councillors and the returning ones, to focus their energies around this issue in a way that will make them see the meaningfulness of that work. Because often it's because one gentleman from one of the countries up north, we were meeting the municipalities, it was a meeting of local governments from across the continent. On a Friday, we were going to meet the donors. So I was one of the people elected to formulate a report to the donors, and we gave it to one old man to present, and in his concluding remarks, he says, and because we knew we were going to be talking to donors, we included questions of gender and environment, because we knew you were going to ask them. We were very disappointed, because he now says that's why we included, not because they were of necessity, what we thought was important, but because we were satisfying the interests of the donors and so on. So it needs ownership to a great extent. So I'm just making that point. Member, thank you very much. We've flagged the issues in a number of areas, and so we will pick them up as we go along. But they are crucial. Thank you for that. Let's go to the finances. And DG, lead us on that one.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. Our CFO, unfortunately, is off sick this week, but we have very able person also in charge. She's director responsible for finances here.
Just one second.
Can you just? Literally, 1.5 minutes or two. Okay, I'll give you two. Liquid balancing break as well, because they are very subjective.
And then we'll take up from there. Quick. 2 minutes.